There are so many children who come from what we would consider ideal homes with considered ideal parents, and they still have suicidal thoughts or commit suicide. But there are things that can contribute more to a child having suicidal thoughts or actually having an attempt. And I think that it's important that we realize what all the things are that might put a child at more risk for suicide. And that's not necessarily the things that we often want them to be in the back of our minds.
You're listening to Inside Mental Health, a Psych Central podcast where experts share experiences and the latest thinking on mental health and psychology. Here's your host, Gabe Howard.
Welcome to the podcast, everyone. I'm your host, Gabe Howard, and calling in today, we have Dr. Noorjehan Abdul-Haq, and she is a board-certified pediatrician, and 3 years after taking the REACH training course to improve her skills diagnosing and managing mental health in pediatric primary care, she became a faculty trainer. Dr. Abdul-Haq, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Today, we are going to be discussing suicide in young children and preteens. Now, suicide alone is a difficult topic to discuss with people. And I know from my own work as a public speaker and as host of this podcast that discussing suicidality in teenagers is a very difficult conversation to have with people. So you can imagine that getting people to acknowledge suicidality in younger children and address it is exceedingly difficult. Most people struggle to see the need to have this conversation with kids. They don't see, for example, 9-year-olds as being at risk to attempt or complete suicide. As a pediatrician, what are your thoughts?
Well, the reality is today's 9-year-olds are actually watching social media all the time. They're looking at reels. They're hearing about things. They're seeing news. So they actually are noticing things that we never would have been exposed to. Just opening up the internet and the news popping up. So a lot of them are actually already seeing people who've committed suicide or other things. So we really do have to have these conversations a little bit earlier.
I really think there are two questions the average parent is wrestling with. Number one is it appropriate to discuss suicide with young children? And then if the answer to that is yes, it is appropriate, the second question becomes, how do I even start to have that conversation? I really think the average parent is concerned that, hey, if I sit my 9-year-old down and talk to them about something as serious as suicide, it's going to upset them, and that will be a mistake, and that will mess them up. I do want to ask, what is a good age to have these conversations?
I mean, there's been lots of dialogue about this, and around the ages of 8 or 9 would be appropriate to have that type of conversation. Of course, the way that you're going to approach it is going to be very different than how you would approach it with your teenager. But simply asking a child, how have you been feeling? Do you ever feel like you don't want to be here? You know, it's not always using the word suicide because most of them don't understand what that is. But I've had 9-year-old patients who said, you know, I don't think I should still be here. My parents are always, they're upset with me. I don't think I belong. It's like if no one's ever had that conversation with them, what would that have turned into? You know, what would the outcome have been if they didn't feel comfortable that particular day having the conversation with me, their pediatrician? So I don't think that parents should really fear that, right? We're taking a very gentle approach to this, just like we would puberty or death in the family. So the same thing, many of these children have experienced it within their families. I know I unfortunately had to have that conversation with my own children due to a family member attempting suicide and another one who was successful, unfortunately. So they didn't quite understand. So we had to have that whole entire dialogue, even at the age of 8. It's such a scary topic, and I completely understand why. It's death. But we talk about death in many other instances quite often. And unfortunately, we often have to explain this to our children. So I don't think that it will mess them up. It's not going to give them ideas. Most parents should have a conversation and just really check on their children, see where they are mentally. So many of the families that I take care of, the parents don't even realize that their child can have anxiety. They don't realize their child can have depression at age 9 or 8. And so they're like, what do you mean they're stressed? They can't be stressed. And I have to explain to them, this is a very different world. You have bombarded their brains. Yes, they get stressed. It's not the same as what we used to have before. And so I think that 8, 9 is still an appropriate age to have these types of conversations and check in on those children regularly.
One of the things that people are surprised when they learn about me, I talk about my life with bipolar disorder when I was diagnosed and the things that I went through as a child and the signs that my parents missed. One of the big things that people are surprised is when I say that I remember thinking about suicide as far back as I can remember. And there's a lot of challenge on that. They're like, well, you mean like 13? And I'm like, no, I mean literally as far back as I can remember. And they're like, well, 9, 10? And I'm like, no, 5. Like every memory I have concerned whether or not I should be alive or dead, literally all the way back. And I understand why this makes people uncomfortable. As we are sitting here, it makes me uncomfortable. And I'm the one who lived through it. But there was no robust mental health education in my childhood. One, this was the 80s. Two, I come from a stereotypically blue-collar household. So I really received messages like this. You're a man, toughen up. We don't cry in public. Keep your emotions in check. You have to protect the women and girls in your life. You have to get a job. And these were the things that were being discussed with me as important. So I had no reason to fear it, which I really think left me in harm's way. Now let's advance all the way to 2023. You've talked about how children are being bombarded with even more. If suicidality was on the menu in 1982, I imagine that it is worse now. And my parents, they so regret not giving me any education. Is that the message, that if you don't give children education, they're left to their own devices and it may not turn out so well?
I definitely would agree. Same with sex education, right? We often make that correlation. If you don't teach them anything, then you never know what the outcome will be. And then you can't actually control the narrative. And I think that parents often, especially nowadays, they want to control the narrative of what their child is learning. It's like, this isn't a topic that you would just say, oh, just learn about it on TV. No, you want to control that narrative so you can better understand what your child is learning, taking in, and how they're processing what they just learned. It's not a conversation you just have and then you walk away and you never address it again. You have to make sure that they understand what was said, and so that they can ask further questions and also feel comfortable doing that with you. But I will tell you that there are some parents that really shouldn't have this conversation with their child. And there's also some who shouldn't have the sex talk with their children either. And so I always say, is there an aunt or is there an uncle or a grandparent or somebody who may feel more comfortable?
What is the role of parents in suicide prevention for young children and preteens?
Every parent's role is to make sure that they are checking in on their children, to have just candid, open-ended conversations and creating an environment in which the child feels safe to speak to them when things are not going as planned. But also, the role of the parent is to pay attention to their child's behavior. And because we're so busy as families, often the dinner time meal is taken away as well. So we have to find ways of finding time to actually just sit with our children and ask them open-ended questions so that you can gauge more. You have to notice if you see a change in behavior. Are they not wanting to go out with their friends? Are they sleeping more than usual? I know they sleep a lot, but is it more than usual? Or are you noticing your little one giving away all their toys or giving away stuff? You know, these are things that you want to be paying attention to, changes in behavior in your child. But if we're all so disengaged with one another and we don't find time to actually be present as parents, then we really may miss early signs that our children could possibly attempt suicide.
Dr. Abdul-Haq, are there any other specific things that parents should be on the lookout for?
So you want to really monitor a child that's not wanting to hang with their friends or wanting to quit the activities or sports, things that they previously loved to do, and now they don't want anything to do with them. You want to monitor them closely. You also want to pay attention to our children who are part of the LGBTQI community. If you know that your child has come out or is thinking about those things, or their majority of their friends are of that community, then you want to be paying attention to them too and making sure you're having a lot of open dialogue, no matter how uncomfortable it may be. I am an African-American woman. And so in the African-American community, we often have some of the higher rates. I think just if you're a minority, you also want to be having these conversations with your children, but paying attention to changes in their behavior, maybe not eating as much, sleeping more, just moving slower, you know, and so you just, those are often signs of early depression. But one of the other things is they're not thinking about the future anymore. Like you went from a kid who had all these aspirations and now they're like, eh, whatever, it doesn't matter. So you just want to try to keep an open ear as much as possible, but then just kind of watch some of the things that they're doing. But I always tell parents, look at your children's friends as well, because some of these children will seek out people who are thinking similar to them. And so you want to know who they're hanging out with and also know what things are being told to them or expressed to them when you're not around.
When it comes to discussing suicide and suicide prevention with young children, I'm talking your 8, 9, 10-year-olds, do you have any conversation starter recommendations?
Well, I think some of the things that you can just ask is open-ended things like, how have you been feeling? You know, just keeping it very generic. But if you're feeling in a space where your child is changing some of these behaviors, just say, you know, I mean, are you feeling like low? Are you feeling really low? Have you ever thought about that you wish you were never born? Do you know any friends or anyone, especially for the teenagers, you know any friends who attempted suicide? You know, how did that make you feel? Is this something that you've ever thought about? Trying to keep the questions as open-ended as possible. And of course, approaching it with a very caring tone is very important to do that. And I see a lot of the kids when we say, you know, have you ever tried to harm yourself? And then they're like, oh, wow, no one's ever asked me this. And so that's another thing that you just may want to say, have you ever done anything to hurt yourself? Have you ever tried to cut or have you thought about doing anything like this? And it's hard as a parent to ask your child something like that, but it could save their life.
And we'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsor. And please keep listening, because after the break, Dr. Abdul Haq shares the best way to discuss the suicide of a loved one with young children and preteens.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Gabe Howard here to tell you about the Inside Bipolar podcast from Healthline Media.
He does the show with me, Dr. Nicole Washington, a board-certified psychiatrist.
That's right. A guy living with bipolar and a psychiatrist team up to discuss living well with bipolar disorder.
Listen now on your favorite podcast player or visit psychcentral.com/IBP to learn more.
Subscribe now so you don't miss out. And we're back with pediatrician Dr. Noor Jihan Abdul Haq, learning how to talk to children about suicide and suicide prevention. I don't think that a conversation about suicidality and suicide prevention in preteens would be complete if we didn't talk about how we handle a suicide in the family. When I was very young, I had a family member, a distant cousin of my mother's, who died by suicide, but I was told that they died by leukemia. And that's just what I always heard. And I just always believed this. And then one day when I was in my late 30s, so, you know, literally 20 plus years later, I happened to mention this particular cousin, and I mentioned that he died from leukemia, and several people said, no, he didn't. He committed suicide. Just that matter of factly. And I was like, wait, what? And I had just never heard this. And I was already a mental health advocate by this point. I'd already had my own struggles with suicidality, bipolar disorder, and nobody thought to circle back and explain this to me, which I can go on for so long about how it made me feel. But how it made me feel was, oh my God, we don't even talk about it. We don't even address this. For many parents, they believe this is a protective factor. I would have been 5 or 6 at the time. So the family was just closing ranks and protecting everybody from this tragedy that happened. Is it okay to do that? Or should you explain to a 5 or 6 year old about a family suicide?
I think it has a lot to do with the family dynamics, because for some families, it's just that it's so hard. And for a 5-year-old, they really don't know the approach. So I definitely recommend that they look for those outside resources, because families often will lie to the children about how a parent died. And when they find out later on, they feel that betrayal, et cetera. So I think that looking for resources, if you don't feel comfortable, to help you and guide you in being able to have that conversation is appropriate. And sometimes we have to just know how to phrase it. And I don't think that was something that I even learned until much later in my medical career, of how to phrase something like this. And so when we experienced it in our family, we just let the children know, sometimes people are so sad, they don't even want to be here anymore. You know, we have to, for us, we pray for this person. We pray that no one else feels this sad, that they don't want to be amongst us. And so it can be very gentle in terms of what you tell the child. But I do think that so often I hear people lying about it, and it does cause some distress later on when people find out the truth. If we can be open and honest and get those resources, I think that it would be more beneficial at that time. But it opens up so many questions later that for some families, they can't even handle that at that time. So I understand why they sometimes will do that early on. But at some point, I think it is good to have the conversation and make sure that they understand what really happened. Like, I have a patient who found her father, but then the younger siblings didn't know. So they had to kind of explain it. But everyone was mourning and everyone was going through things. They chose to just not tell the younger ones exactly what happened. But then later on, went ahead and had that conversation with them. They didn't wait too long, just a few months, and then had the actual conversation with them, which I think is important. But it is something that I think there's such a stigma behind it. There's embarrassment. There's a lot of blame. People blame themselves for why someone did that. That impacts how they're able to have the conversation. So I don't fault people for initially saying something. I don't think you should just make up something completely out of the blue, like leukemia. But just maybe, I don't know, I'm not 100% right now, or whatever that case is, if they have to do that just for them to make it through the situation. But I think we should also try to come back around to be honest with that child.
When it's time to have that conversation, are there any particular ways that you feel are better than others, or any professional recommendations?
I think the biggest thing is to make sure that you have time to answer questions. So make sure it's not in a rush situation, that you sit the child down and use analogies, especially if they're younger, maybe TV shows they watch or things like that, so they can better understand what's being said. For our older children, letting them express themselves once you've kind of given that information. You're questioning, well, why? Why would someone want to do that? So you have to be ready to answer those questions. A good approach is to just make sure that you have gotten yourself to a point as a parent to where you can be open and you can be honest, and then also reassure them. If you ever have these feelings, I'm here for you. And if you don't feel like you can have that conversation, ask a friend, ask a family member, or, you know, a mental health expert to assist you with that, because it isn't easy. You know, I've also have children whose parents or family members have been murdered or were in gangs or other things. And they want to preserve the integrity of that person. And so it's very difficult for them to be truthful and honest. So I don't think it's just black and white. I think it's a very gray picture. And but I definitely think that we should do our best to be as honest, because if they find out that you didn't tell them the truth, it can actually sometimes impair information and things going forward, because they're like, I don't trust you anymore. So we have to be very careful in what we say to them.
There's a lot of myths about suicide, and one of them is that if you talk to somebody about suicide, you give them the idea. Now, that's a complete myth. It's not true. But even people who understand that talking to someone about suicide does not give them the idea, they sort of regress and think, well, but talking to a 9-year-old most certainly gives them the idea because they've never heard about it before. Can you bust that myth for us?
Just because you talk about something doesn't mean someone's going to do it. If that was the case, then we should take all drug education out of schools because we're clearly causing everyone to start using drugs. Educating someone doesn't mean that now they're going to embark on this thing. But when we don't educate them and we don't teach them about what to expect, things to look out for, letting them know that we hear them, we see them, then we can expect worse outcomes. It's very fearful. And I understand we try to protect our children and their babies, and we don't want them to grow up too fast. But that's out of our hands at this point, unless you live in a very rural space with no internet and you don't allow your child to watch TV or read magazines, newspapers, et cetera, because they are going to be exposed to many different things. And so now the conversation is just going to be different. And we have to come to that realization, even though it is very difficult to understand how things have changed. So no, making sure your child is okay, making sure that they know what suicide is or understand just the idea that sometimes people don't want to be here. And if you ever feel that way, I need you to let me know or let auntie know or whomever. That is not going to then say, okay, I don't want to be here today. Let me figure out a plan. That's just not how it works. We're seeing this uptick in suicide. And so there's true fear around it, but the uptick is not because people are educating more teens about it. That's not the reason why.
I want to be a little difficult for a moment, if I may. You've done everything right. You've noticed the symptoms. You've done everything. You're ready. You're the engaged parent. We've done everything that you've said, and their child just won't talk to them. They've sat them down. They've used the conversation starters. They've remained open. They've asked other family members. They've just really done everything they can to broach the topic, but they're just getting walled off. What should parents do then?
I would say make an appointment with your pediatrician, an urgent appointment, to discuss this with them to see maybe if your child will open up to them. But if not, just allowing them to help direct you in what should be done next. Oftentimes when people come into my office with these scenarios, I immediately am able to set them up with a therapist. Other times we're not able to, but we have crisis lines. So making sure families understand, you know, 988 is the new number for the suicide crisis line, but making sure that we put in place what we need to. So if the child is actually suicidal, whether they're verbally saying it or from actions or from the history, then in my office, we come up with a plan. We try to see, is this emergent today to where I need to admit you into a facility? Or is this something that we can start with a therapist? And then we create a safety plan in the office. Going forward with frequent checkups and things like that, do not place it on the back burner. If you're suspecting it and your child will not communicate with you, use your tools and resources. And one of those is your primary care physician. Utilize us and ask for that help. Just like I said, if it was a broken bone, you'd come in. So don't just let them walk on it.
And I have to ask, as a pediatrician, when a parent brings in a child with mental health concerns or even a child who is suicidal, do you think less of those parents?
Oh, no. I really applaud them because that means that they're paying attention. And I pick up so many children when I have them fill out the PHQ-9 form, which is the suicide screener in my office. And the last three questions ask, have you ever attempted suicide? And I get so many children that check that, and the parents have zero clue. And that's just at a well child check. I applaud the parents who come to me before I've had to do the screener, because that means they're paying attention. So I hope no one feels that stigma, and I hope that no medical provider makes anyone feel that way, because I think that we're all here to help and make sure that we are in the business of prevention, because every time a life is lost, we all feel that impact, because that was a child that could have contributed to this society and simply was a part of our society and our world. We all need to be more in the business of prevention and applauding those people who take the steps to get the help that they need for their children.
thank you so much for being here. And thank you so much for being candid about such a difficult topic. We really appreciate that. And we really appreciate your time. Now, listeners, you can find out more about the Reach Institute and the trainings they offer at thereachinstitute.org and Dr. Abdul Haq owns Peace of Mind Pediatrics in Oklahoma City. You can also find her on Instagram at Dr. Jihan08. Dr. Abdul Haq, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You are very welcome, and I want to give a big thank you to all of our listeners. My name is Gabe Howard, and I am an award-winning public speaker, and I could be available for your next event. I also wrote the book Mental Illness is an Asshole and Other Observations, which you can get on Amazon. However, you can grab a signed copy with free show swag and learn more about me just by heading over to my website, GabeHoward.com. Wherever you downloaded this episode, please follow or subscribe to the show. It is 100% free, and you don't want to miss a thing. And listen up, can you do me a favor? Recommend the show. Share it on social media. Share it in an email. Share it in a support group. Hell, send somebody a text message, because sharing the show is how we grow. I will see everybody next Thursday on Inside Mental Health.
You've been listening to Inside Mental Health, a Psych Central podcast from Healthline Media. Have a topic or guest suggestion? Email us at show@psychcentral.com. Previous episodes can be found at psychcentral.com/show or on your favorite podcast player. Thank you for listening.